Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're stepping onto the mat, but not as wrestlers. We're getting inside the high-stakes, incredibly meticulous world of high school wrestling officiating.
Yeah, and we're looking specifically at the professional mechanics required by the MHSAA. This is a fascinating deep dive because it's not just about the rules of a match.
Right.
It's about the professional mandate of that person in the black and white stripes. There's so much more than a refne. They're the guardian of safety, and their job starts way, way before that first whistle.
A full hour before, in fact. And that's our mission today, really, to dissect that unseen checklist, the whole philosophy behind what they do. I mean, what does it actually take to be the guardian of the rules in a sport this fast?
Well, our source material is incredibly detailed. We're talking guides on professionalism, the MHSAA Blue Book, specific rule reminders for scholastic athletes.
So grades 6 through 12.
Exactly. And it's not just a guide to making calls. It's a guide to professional conduct. It makes it really clear that, you know, just getting it close is not an option in this role.
That focus on conduct is what I find so interesting. So let's start there with the core philosophy, because that kind of dictates every single action they take.
It absolutely does. The material lays out three foundational reasons for an official to even be there, and they build on each other.
Okay, what's number one?
Number one is totally non-negotiable. Safety first. The official's primary concern, above all else, is the safe participation of every single student athlete.
So if they see something dangerous, they have to stop it.
Immediately. The directive is if you see, sense, or even just feel danger, you blow the whistle. No hesitation.
And after safety comes fairness.
Right. Fairness. You're there to make sure the match is decided by the skill and the effort of the athletes. Not by bias, not by a bad call. You are literally the guardian of the rules.
And the third piece is service, just giving back to the community.
Yeah, and when you put service together with safety and fairness, you start to see why the professional standards are just so incredibly high. They're not just, you know, punching a clock. They're protecting the integrity of youth sports.
Which means they have to apply the rules exactly as written. It's not about penalizing a kid. It's about protecting the contest itself for everybody.
That's it. And that protection gets really nuanced when you talk about scholastic athletes. There's this concept called developmental awareness.
This is where it gets really fascinating to me, because it's where high school officiating is completely different from, say, the college level.
Totally different. You just can't officiate a match between two 14-year-olds like it's the NCAA finals.
So what are the key physical differences an official has to be thinking about?
Well, the sources are clear on this. Scholastic athletes, so we're talking anyone from 6th to 12th grade, are still developing physically, mentally, even neurologically.
So they react slower.
Measurably slower. They react slower to quick weight shifts, to pressure changes, to submission holds. It's just not the same as a fully developed collegiate athlete.
Which means the official's timing is everything. If you jump in too fast, you kill a legal move. But if you wait a split second too long,
you risk a serious injury. It's a very delicate balance. The rule is you anticipate, but you do not over-anticipate. You have to give them that little bit of extra time to react.
And that's because their bodies are just different, right? Bones, muscles, joints.
Exactly. We're talking about emerging bone growth, muscles that aren't fully developed. Joint flexibility and strength just aren't there yet. So a hold that a 22-year-old might just shrug off could cause a real ligament or bone injury to a younger kid.
So the mantra is err on the side of caution.
Always. A hold that might be fine at the college level, like a certain angle on an arm bar, could be an immediate, potentially dangerous call in high school, purely because of the developmental stage of that athlete. It's like built-in risk management.
That is a perfect way to put it. And that whole protective mindset, that control, it actually starts with their appearance, right? The uniform.
Yes. The official's visual presence is part of the whole mechanism to eliminate subjectivity.
Okay, so let's get into the professionalism, the integrity, and the appearance. The rules here are so strict, almost like creating a uniform of objectivity. What do they have to wear?
It's rigid for a reason.
Yeah.
It's all about reinforcing that impartiality. It has to be a short-sleeved knit shirt, either the classic black and white stripes or gray with black pinstripes.
And everyone has to match.
Everyone at the site has to match. No one official should stand out from the others.
And the rest of the outfit?
Black full-length trousers.
Yep.
No jeans, no shorts. a black belt if there are loops, black socks, and black officiating shoes. It's just total visual conformity.
Even down to the accessories I read. The whistle, the wristbands.
Oh, absolutely. The whistle has to be black.
Yeah.
And they actually prefer plastic over metal.
Why plastic?
To avoid chipping your teeth. It's a small thing, but it's a real occupational hazard when you're moving fast in a match. And then you have the wristbands. Red on the left wrist, green on the right.
And that's mandatory. Red on left, green on right. Why so specific?
It's all about unambiguous communication. The red and green match the colors on the scoring machine for each wrestler. By putting them on specific arms, the official removes any doubt about who they're pointing to for a point or a penalty. It shaves seconds of confusion off every call.
That clarity makes a lot of sense. Which brings us to another core directive, staying in your lane.
Absolutely. The official's job is so clearly defined. There are three roles, wrestler, coach, and referee. And the ref is told in no uncertain terms, do not coach the wrestlers.
So no shouting, move your hips, or anything like that?
Never. You don't give advice.
Yeah.
You don't try to wrestle the match for them. You officiate it. It maintains that critical neutrality.
All right, so let's shift from the philosophy and the uniform to the actual work that happens before the first match even begins, the 60-minute checklist.
That's right. People assume the job starts with the first whistle, but an official's authority begins the moment they arrive at the site, which has to be 60 minutes early.
So they show up, fully dressed, an hour early. What's the very first thing on the checklist?
First, you find the administration, the tournament director, whoever's at the head table. You check in. Then you go straight to the mat inspection.
And what are you looking for?
You physically walk the entire mat, the surface, the perimeter. You're looking for any gaps in the tape or the foam sections. Anywhere a finger or a toe could get caught and twisted.
And the safety zone around the mat has to be checked too.
Oh, that's paramount. The safety area should be at least 5 feet wide, all the way around the mat. And it has to be clear. No tables, no chairs, no gym bags. Nothing a wrestler could get thrown into. If it's not safe, the meet doesn't start.
Wow. And they also have to manage the people at the scorer's table. That sounds tricky.
It can be. The official has to go over and speak with the scorers and timers, make sure they're focused. They're actually instructed to ask them to put away their phones or any personal devices.
Really?
Yes, because a distraction could mean missing a crucial point or messing up the clock. They also have to confirm a biohazard receptacle is there.
Okay, now, for the most critical pre-meet duty, I think, the skin check. The official is basically a medical gatekeeper here.
It is the last line of defense against spreading communicable diseases. The procedure is very specific. Boys and girls weigh in, shoulder to shoulder, by weight class.
Mm-hmm.
The official does a visual inspection.
And they're looking for things like ringworm or impetigo.
Exactly. Ringworm, which looks like circular red lesions. Impetigo, which is kind of like crusted sores. Or herpes, which are clusters of blisters.
And if they see something suspicious, the rules on documentation are incredibly strict.
This is non-negotiable. If a wrestler has a suspicious mark, they have to present the official MHSAA communicable disease form. It must be signed by an MD, DO, a PA, or an MP.
So let me get this straight. If a coach just brings a note scribbled on a prescription pad from the family doctor, that doesn't work.
Absolutely not. The sources are explicit. A note on a prescription pad is not valid. It has to be that official form, which confirms treatment has started and the lesion isn't active anymore.
And you can't just cover it up, right?
No. Covering a communicable condition with tape or a bandage is not acceptable. That wrestler cannot participate, period.
That must put the official in a really tough spot having to disqualify a kid. How do they actually conduct the inspection itself?
This is a huge ethical and procedural point. It is a visual inspection only. The official is told, in bold letters, do not touch any contestant during inspections. You maintain distance, rely on your eyes, and look at the paperwork.
So once the skin checks are done, safety's confirmed, they check the gear.
Right. Laces tied and taped, headgear is secure. Then they hold the captain's meeting and remind everyone that sportsmanship is number one before any wrestling even starts.
It's all about setting that professional tone, which they'll need once the action begins and they have to handle conflicts or, you know, complex penalties.
For sure. And some of those penalties are really interesting, especially the ones for administrative mistakes.
Like the one for an ineligible wrestler. That 7-point team penalty is huge.
It's a massive deterrent. If an ineligible wrestler is discovered during a dual meet, the duel continues, but the team that made the error gets hit with a 7-point penalty right away.
7 points. How does that break down?
Okay, so it's 6 points for the forfeit of that one specific match. Plus, they deduct one additional team point for unsportsmanlike conduct. and that's charged directly to the coach for the mistake.
Wow. That makes sure coaches are taking their paperwork as seriously as their strategy.
It does. And then you have the other end of the spectrum, flagrant misconduct. The ultimate penalty for things like, you know, intentionally biting or striking someone.
And that's an immediate disqualification.
Immediate DQ, a 3-point team deduction, and that wrestler is out of the rest of the competition for that event. And the official has to be trained to look for physical evidence, like for a bite, you need to see the marks from both the upper and lower teeth.
Let's go back to safety for a second. That preventative call, potentially dangerous. This is about stopping an injury before it even happens.
And the official has to be aggressive here. If they see, sense, or feel something's about to go wrong, like a joint is twisting in a way it shouldn't, they blow the whistle hard and stop the action. Right then.
A moment's hesitation could be the difference.
It really could. And there's a neat little nuance here. Let's say wrestler A puts on a perfectly legal hold, but then wrestler B twists or turns and makes the hold illegal on themselves.
So they basically put themselves in danger.
Exactly. The official stops it as potentially dangerous, but there's no penalty for wrestler A. The ref recognizes the danger came from the other wrestler's bad move.
Finally, let's talk about managing the coaches. When a coach wants to challenge a call, where does that happen?
It has to happen at the scorer's table. Never on the mat, never in the official's path. And if the coach questions a judgment call, and they're wrong, they get a misconduct warning.
But what if the coach comes in hot, you know, disrespectful or abusive?
Then you bypass the warning entirely. It's an immediate, unsportsmanlike penalty and a team point deduction. The referee's job is to stay calm, be professional, and explain the ruling by focusing only on the rulebook criteria. No personal arguments.
This whole deep dive just shows that the wrestling official is, I mean, they're a true specialist. They're a medical screener, a safety engineer, a crisis manager.
And a procedural expert.
Yeah.
They have to follow these intense mechanics over any personal feeling or opinion. That's why they have to constantly study the rule books, the case books. It's not a suggestion. It's the only way they can be fair.
Yeah, the whole goal is to eliminate subjectivity. We've seen it in every detail, from the wristband colors to the skin check form. It's all designed to get rid of bias. Which leads to our final thought.
Right.
In a sport that relies so much on split-second judgment, on visual cues, how does this extreme commitment to process fundamentally build trust? Not just between the wrestlers and the official, but between the entire community and the rules themselves. That trust is what makes it a fair competition instead of just, you know, arbitrary chaos. Think about that responsibility the next time you hear that little plastic whistle start a match.